Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Computer Town USA. I'm your host. My name is Amnon. Our phone number here is 860-9549, 860-9549. Any computer questions and comments are welcome, from beginners to techies. With us in the studio today are, as usual, Megan, our engineer, and Ray Nissan of CyberMission Incorporated in Toronto, Canada. If the last name sounds familiar, yeah, he's my cousin. And with him, David, his son, who is going to help with the presentation. We're going to be talking about workload automation in the mainframe and distributed client server. But like I said, any computer questions or comments are welcome. You don't have to limit your questions to the subject at hand. Our number again is 860-9549. A few notices. Triumph Computer Society meeting is going to be this month on July 25th. At 7:15 p.m. at Dreyfus. I have no idea what the subject is going to be yet, but we're going to have a meeting, I think, this week to decide on that. We were talking before about different name brand clones and why you should stay away. Had an interesting case yesterday. Don brought in his Packard Bell 38620. And the computer did real funny things that none of us could figure out why. It would work, and then it would lock, and it would work, and there was no pattern to it until we found the pattern that his modem was locking up the machine. He had an internal modem that had a bad chip on it, I guess, and it was locking it up. After we thought that everything was fine and we closed it up, it worked for about 2 hours and then it started running real slow. And I guess with Packard Bell, you still have to use the control alt minus and plus to get it up and down from turbo to non-turbo. And every time you would hit either or the minus or the plus, it looks like you kind of pushed the computer a little bit, pushed the processor, and it did a little bit and stopped again. Needless to say that Don is going to have to probably replace the motherboard. Fortunately, he's got extended warranty, and that would hopefully cover it. But if you have a situation like that, again, with a computer like that, you are at the mercy of the manufacturer. And this is, again, why I keep saying stay with something standard. Now, if any of you out there who use Packard Bells and have no problem with them and want to tell me how wrong I am, please be you're welcome to it. I know probably 90% of them work and have no problem. Our number again is 860-9549, so feel free to call me and tell me, hey, you don't know what you're talking about. Okay, one more thing. I just I'm looking through InfoWorld, and I see something that we've been talking about for some time now about the Microsoft and Stack dispute. And here's the headline: it says that Microsoft and Stack resolve dispute. Microsoft finally pays up, and new era of cooperation. They paid something like $120 million. To Stack, and Ray here is telling me that he heard that in DOS 6.3 the Stacker is going to be back in. That's interesting. I didn't go through the whole article, but this is very interesting that something like this really got solved, like Megan said, real fast. It didn't tie it in court. Nice. Maybe it is a new era of cooperation. I'll look through it a little more later and give you some more tidbits, but right now I want to turn to Ray and give him the floor. Ray, you've been in... Good morning.
Good morning.
You've been in computers now...
Gee, I don't know, since, I guess 20 years or more.
20 years or more. And tell us, like, in your words, what... What do you do with the company, and who you cater to?
Our company produces workload automation software, which is software which enables you to pre-program your computer to perform functions without you actually having to manually intervene. And typically our customers are usually very large companies that have the larger IBM mainframes. And so typically they're pretty large Fortune 500 type companies.
And like who do you have as a customer? I mean,
companies like GTE, AT&T, you know, larger insurance companies, Allstate.
Okay. All right.
And basically, our software enables people to achieve greater throughput in their computer in terms of being able to automate the batch functions. Maybe to kind of explain, people who are familiar with mainframes know what batch jobs are and what workload is. But maybe if I go back into the history of mainframes, I can explain workload automation a little bit more. In the old days, I mean, we're talking more than 20 years ago, computers, which we'd now classify, I guess, as mainframes, were very, very simple. They had simple operating systems that could maybe perform one task at a time. And people would sit around with card readers and literally feed in jobs, they're called jobs, into the computer one at a time. They'd wait for a job to complete, check that the output was correct, and then when they'd done that, they'd go and take another deck of cards and feed that deck of cards into the card reader. The operating system would process it, and the job would run. These jobs are typically jobs such as doing accounting or payroll, and they're called batch because literally you put them in batches in background. Later on, computers began to get a little bit smarter, and they became multitasking and multi-programming. Basically, it meant that since the CPU, the central processor, was so fast, the central processor was able to handle much more workload than the peripherals, which are basically the card readers and the printers. So rather than having the central processor, basically the brains of the computer, waiting all the time while a line printer would be printing very, very slowly, they thought, let's expand the memory of the processor and feed in more workload at a time into it, and the central processor could be kept busy even though its peripherals, such as its printers and its card readers and so on, were being slow. So you began the onset of multitasking operating systems which could actually handle multiple units of work at the same time, all sharing processor resources. We also had the advent of time sharing, and time sharing meant that people could connect terminals to the mainframe and start interacting with the mainframe. And while a user was using the mainframe through a terminal, that was known as foreground processing. The jobs that were still running that typically used to be on card decks were still running in the background, and they're known as background jobs or batch jobs. Again, in the early days of time sharing, you used to have operators that initially used to feed jobs into the system using card decks would now maybe use a terminal and have the control language which described the jobs or the units of work sitting on a disk drive, and they could, from their terminal, initiate a piece of work. When the work finished, again, they'd check the output either by going directly to the printer and checking the output of the job, or maybe checking online if the program was smart enough and could actually display the information online. But again, it was a manual effort in that you had to put in your work into your system manually, and you had to check the output manually. And also, the programs in those days weren't particularly smart. You'd have to give them all kinds of parameters like what's today's date, and if you're posting a check run, what's the date of last Friday, and so on. So every day there was kind of manual effort put in. You couldn't run exactly the same workload every day. You had to make minor modifications to tailor the workload. As computers became faster and faster, it was really not acceptable for you to have to feed in this workload and check it manually at the pace of an operator, because by the time one job finished and you're checking the output, the computer is basically idle waiting for more work to process. So then came on the advent of automated workload schedulers or automated job schedulers. With a job scheduler, you can predefined to it, even years up in advance, the correct mix of jobs that have to go into the system on any particular day. You could also identify to this scheduler the relationship between these jobs and the conditions under which they could be considered successful or unsuccessful. So what you do is now, rather than you sitting there with a deck of cards, or rather than you going out there and directing the computer to go and read information from a particular file on disk, you can tell the computer, you can give it essentially a list of instructions, and that list of instructions would tell it where to find the work, when to put it into the system. It'll tell the computer the relationship between the work units or jobs, and you can tell the computer the conditions under which a job is considered successful, and so that it can release its dependencies. So that was really the advent of the automated job scheduler or workload management system. And different systems give you different degrees of flexibility and different degrees of the ability to tailor the workload so that you'd minimize your manual intervention. Some systems might do 50% of the automation. Some systems might go and do 90 to 100% of the automation, so that would completely eliminate redundant tasks. Now, computers, especially mainframes, are getting much more into distributed architectures, in that the mainframe is effectively becoming a giant server to very large distributed networks. Most of the companies that we deal with have networks of other computers, whether they be Unix machines or the RS6000s, the new IBM RS6000s, the AS400 or OS2. And also mainframes communicate with local area networks. You can kind of bring an analogy with the evolution of mainframes to the evolution of the PC and local area networks. When people originally had their PCs, they'd have one or two applications which they might run on it on a daily basis, such as writing a spreadsheet or running a program. And again, you'd have to sit in front of your system, whether it's at the DOS command line or whether it's in Windows, but you'd basically have to launch an application, tell it where the files are, and let the application run. This is really kind of equivalent or analogous to the early days of the mainframe, when you had an operator sitting in front of a card reader. The computers are a bit more sophisticated than they used to be, but effectively it's the same kind of process. And now you're finding that PCs are getting interconnected with local area networks and wide area networks, and you're finding that there are a lot of functions that you do that you'd really like to automate. You might like to launch applications such as a backup, for instance, at nighttime when you're not there. There might be other situations where you want to collect data and produce a report so that when you come into your office in the morning, the report is waiting for you. If the processing requires several minutes or hours of your PC, you don't really want to do that while you're there. You might want to have it done for you during the evening and have it ready for you in the morning. So we're finding that the same pattern that emerged with mainframes is now emerging with PCs on people's desktops, with local area networks. You'd find that, for instance, with a local area network server, you need a lot of automated functions to be performed, not only backups, but perhaps other pieces of work to get coordinated. So you'll find that workload automation will start appearing on the other platforms, especially on the local area network, in the near future. And in fact, certain products already have that kind of capability.
Okay. We'll be back to that. We have to break away for commercial. We'll be right back with you. Our number is 860-9549. The lines are open. Hang on.
850 AM WYLT. Something exciting is about to happen. Get a pencil ready, because in a moment, we're going to give you the number for your connection to Internet. The information highway available from Interpath.
The information highway is here today. Imagine being able to reach out of the confines of your home, school, or office to obtain information from 20 million people worldwide on virtually any subject. Your connection is the Internet, the information highway that knows no boundaries. Talk to people anywhere with email. Send and receive data or graphics through your Internet connection. InterPath will link you to these Internet resources. Reach out today. Call InterPath.
Are you ready for that number now? It's 1-800-849-6305 for your connection to Internet. Call IndoPath today. That number again is 1-800-849-6305. 1-800-849-6305.
8:50 a.m. WYLT.
Welcome back to Computer Town USA. Our phone number again is 860-9549. I'm your host. My name is Amnon. With us in the studio today are Ray Nissan of Cybermation Inc. in Toronto, Canada, and David Nissan. And we're talking about workload automation in the mainframe and distributed client server. When we left, Ray was explaining a little bit of the history of workload automation. Ray, did you want to go more into the explaining about the PC as it evolves into, or is that, was that?
That's basically it.
Okay. Now, to the listeners who are out there and are working in a mainframe environment or in a mini, I mean, does this have anything to do with the mini, or does it?
Actually, the line of the difference between mini and mainframe is kind of dissolving. People are talking about things like the death of the mainframe, but in fact, we have a mainframe, and our mainframe sits in a cabinet that's not much larger than a mini. In fact, it looks like a tower case, and you'll find that the technology is merging, whereas large mainframes used to use bipolar circuits, emitter coupled logic, very very high speed circuits. They're now going to CMOS technology, just like the minis and the PCs. So you'll find that the difference is really
they're closing the gap. What kind of existing operations or existing networks or companies that have an existing system in place, what can the software make each and every application more productive, or does it help some more than others? I mean, we have audience out there and they work on which one of them should actually give a call and say, you know what, we heard it and I think we could take advantage of something like that. Who is the...
It's difficult to, there's no particular company type. It really depends on your workload. For instance, if you're sitting there with a PC, there are certain things that you should be doing which you might or might not be doing because it's a chore to do. But one thing, for instance, is doing regular backups. A lot of software has the capability of, you know, simple scheduling whereby you can say every day at 8 p.m. do my backups or do a disk compression or defrag. Those things are fairly simple, and they're not really dependent on each other. They're really things that have to go at a particular time every night. And usually those kind of schedulers are built into the product. But you'll find that in your system there are tasks that you do, which is basically launching a batch file, something that does not require too much interaction, but essentially it's executing a program, executing a batch file. And when you have a lot of these batch files that are kind of dependent on each other, that you want to do several things on each PC and then perhaps something on the network server, when units of work are kind of interrelated, that's when it's great help to have a workload management system or system automation product that will take these units of work, see them as one entity, and manage them to try and remove the manual intervention.
So. I never laid a hand on a mainframe. I guess I'm taking for granted that the mainframe would have the same capabilities as a desktop. I mean, a desktop, all those tasks that you mentioned happen. I mean, it's no big deal. You know, you want to do a backup in the middle of the night, it's no big deal. It's a couple of keystrokes in the software and so forth. Are you saying that in the mainframe, it is not as simple, that you actually need another program to run on top of everything else in order to make that available? Is that sort of like...
Well, on the mainframe, there are some rudimentary commands which are not unlike the ones you find on the PCs that get the mainframe to schedule automatic commands at certain times of the day. Unix has a system called Cron, which is a permanently running program or task that looks at a file and launches applications at certain times. And you can say, I want this to run at 6 p.m. Every day or on weekdays, mm-hmm. or on Friday. Or you can say, I want something to run every hour. Those systems, though, do not allow you to tie in fairly complex schedules. Let me give you an example. A bank might, for instance, have a suite of 120 jobs that have to run on a daily basis. But on certain days of the week, like on Tuesdays, they want to include certain jobs, and on the last workday of the month, they want to exclude certain jobs and include others. So when you have hundreds of jobs, and in fact, some of our customers actually run in excess of 20,000 of these jobs a day in different combinations. And the rules might be that most days you run these set of jobs, but on Tuesdays I want you to run these extra jobs, and I don't want you to include these ones. On the last workday of each month, I want you to do this. Mm-hmm. On the 10th workday of the month, I want you to include these jobs. When you look at all these jobs and their interrelationships, trying to do this manually would involve a lot of elapsed time in terms of manually determining when one job's finished successfully and releasing the next. But also, it could be prone to errors, because you might accidentally release one job ahead of time on one day, or release a job on a day that it's not supposed to go. And any time you have a minor error like this, it can generate hundreds of hours of time trying to clean up, and then you have to rerun your workload, because you could have a program that updates a file incorrectly because it hasn't got the correct input. So in those situations, workload automation is very important. In fact, many sites would not be able to utilize their computers efficiently without some kind of automation. In the PC world at the moment, the requirements are much simpler, but that's because PC world and the local area networks are still in their basic infancy.
Yeah, and you have somebody interacting with that particular computer, I guess, all the time that it needs, while the mainframe sits there and does a lot of stuff on its own, even if nobody is hooked into it.
That's correct.
I'm learning something here. Ray talked about the history of workload automation. Let me just share with you a little bit of history here. What was it? I think it was 68, 69. We were in Jerusalem, laying on the floor somewhere at one of our uncles, I don't remember, and we were talking about what we were going to be doing. And Ray was going to be an astronaut. He was going to be an astronaut, and I was going to be a TV producer. I mean, now, we weren't no eight-year-old kids. We were serious, I mean, and we were going to pursue it, and I know I tried, and it just didn't work out, because I had to go to Canada. I mean, gosh, look where we are now. it's interesting. Let me remind the audience, our number is 860-9549, 860-9549, and the line is open. Mark, if you're listening, you were asking me about the Plex Store quadruple speed CD. I heard from one person yesterday who also said to right now to stay away from it. Another person actually said that it's a great drive, though. So I don't know. This is just the way. Do you know anything about it?
No.
I would still say stay away from it, because it's too new. This is June 27th, InfoWorld, and it's just been announced, so it must be real, real new. Unless you want to be a guinea pig, stay away from it. Just a second. Let me get this here. And you know how many of you are, and Ray, I'm sort of like getting away from this for a second. A lot of you out there have pretty good-sized hard drives, but it fills up real quick. We were looking for speed, and with the new programs under Windows, now we have the TrueType. The TrueType put all the fonts, every single size, in every single style, right there on the disk to take room. InfoWorld tells you to replace the TrueType with Adobe Type Manager to save file space, which is true, because the way that Adobe works, it's got a base font, and it will build the font you're looking for on the fly. So it doesn't take that much room, but it's a little slower. While it has to go and build it, and with a slow machine it was taking forever, the TrueType is there already in place, and all it has to do is go get it and use it. But it fills up the drive for sure. You can imagine the more, and you can sit there and build more and more and more and more fonts. Here's another thing about Packer Bell. Redesigns PC to be colorful and easy to use, and I'm looking at a picture that I sure hope nobody brings me one of these things to work on. It really looks weird. It probably works, and it's neat and it's nice, but I would hate to work on one of these. All-in-one design mimics the multimedia Performa introduced earlier by Apple and starts at $999. Not too bad. Megan, why don't we break away for a commercial? Our number again is 860-9549. We'll be right back with you.
850 AM WYLT. If you use a computer and live in the Triangle, you need to know about Triangle Computer News. With over 30,000 readers, it's the largest publication dedicated to the computer industry in the Triangle. Each month, Triangle Computer News brings the latest industry news and articles on timely subjects by contributing experts on software and hardware. Triangle Computer News can be found at over 90 locations, including most computer retailers, malls, and public libraries. For advertising information or a free subscription, call 846-7858, 830 till 530, Monday through Friday. Triangle Computer News, the premier computer publication in the Triangle. 850 AM, WYLT.
Welcome back to Computer Town USA. Our phone number again is 860-9549, and we have a caller waiting. Good morning. You on the air, Chris?
Good morning. I've got a problem with a fast modem that I access from either Excel or WordPerfect. If I access the program first, after cutting the machine on, it'll tell me when I try to print to the fax.
Yeah.
If the modem doesn't exist, so I have to cut the PC off, reboot Windows, and then it'll then recognize something's overriding my modem once a program kicks in.
Okay.
When do you know what's wrong?
Let me ask you this. What COM port is the modem on? Is it on COM 4?
I'm not sure.
When you go to print it, are you using something like WinFax?
Yes, that's what I'm using.
Does it not say WinFax on COM?
It may, I'm not sure.
Okay.
There are
situations. Windows, for some reason, doesn't like to hop over a COM port that is not being used.
Okay.
If you have COM 1 and COM 2, and let's say your COM 1 is the mouse, you really can't put the modem on COM 3 because COM 1 and COM 3 are using the same IRQ. So you would normally, you would think, hey, I'll go to COM 4, which is fine. It would not jump over and use a modem on a higher COM port for some reason.
So if it sees COM 2 is empty, then it's not going to go out to COM 4.
That's right. It's not only COM 2, it's COM 3 also that is not even utilized.
Okay.
Megan is putting up something in front of my face. What is an IRQ? The IRQ is interrupt request. I need somebody like that who would draw in and say, explain. But no, your best bet would be really in Windows, and I found that out to be the best situation. You can set your modem to COM 1. Do away, I mean, disable COM 1 on your I/O card. What kind of computer is it?
It's one you sold me, actually, so it's whatever you put together.
Okay. Chris.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm trying to... It didn't ring a bell.
Okay.
Then you have an I.O. card in there, and you need to disable the I.O. You have to disable COM 1. Then set your modem to COM 1.
And what
on COM 2. Now, you can... If your mouse has a 19 versus a 25 pin, you would have to swap the connectors on the inside of the machine to allow the 9 pin to be connected to COM 2. Problems, and you can't figure it out. I don't know. Do you still have the documentation for the I/O card?
It should be in the box somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. If you don't have it, you're in Raleigh.
Yeah.
Okay, give me a call during the week. You can get me at 851-7000.
Okay.
And I'll try and walk you through it. But it really shouldn't be a problem. And I've got the feeling that this is the problem. Once you reboot Windows and you don't go to anything else and you tell it to fax, it works?
Yeah, that one fax saves the document as a fax document. I just tell it to retry it.
Okay. Yeah, I would think that this is the problem you have. Unless, I don't know, it could be a software conflict somewhere in the configuration, and I am not a WinFax pro. I mean, well, WinFax pro. I don't use WinFax, so I can't help you much with that. Maybe somebody else out there who hears your question has a better or another explanation could call in and let us know.
That was great.
Thanks for calling, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Again, I want to remind you that our number is 860-9549, 860-9549. The line is open, so feel free to call in about anything that you want to talk about. I was asking Ray during the break if the program is sort of, I mean, I'm trying to understand it myself, if it's like a shell that is running on top of everything and doing things, and he started explaining it to me, and we had to come back on the air. Ray, why don't you explain so other people can also get the benefit? So is it like a shell, and you know PCs, and you know what I'm talking about, a shell. Is it something like that that's running?
It's basically, there are several components to workload management system. I can talk a little bit about the way it's architected on the mainframe and how it applies to other PCs. But there's a component known as a manager component. And the manager component basically has extensions to it called sensors, agents which feed it information about things that are happening in the system. It also understands such things as the time and date and calendars. What you do through some kind of user interface, you communicate. It's really a client-server application. The server being, in this case, the manager. You, through a user interface, which is a client, you'd tell a manager that at certain points of time there's a set of instructions out there in a file, and you want it to read that set of instructions, let's say at 6 a.m. every day or at 2 p.m. every day. And what would happen is the manager would go out and read those sets of instructions, and the set of instructions is literally like a piece of paper which directs you how identifies the units of work, where they reside, and their relationship. And what the manager would do is take these sets of instructions, determine from the current environment, like what day it is today, which of the actual workload units need to be active on that day, and construct an object in its own memory which describes those set of related workload objects. Then whenever a workload object is able to execute, it has no predecessor requirements, it's not waiting for any resources, what it does is it sends out a signal to one of its agents, which is a kind of motor extension to it. You can think of really it as a brain with senses and arms and legs, that when certain conditions are correct, it'll send a signal out to it, one of its motor extensions, again an agent. And the agent could be sitting on the same machine, or the agent could be sitting on a remote distributed machine, telling that agent to go and initiate some workload, which in the case of a PC could be executing a batch file. Mm-hmm. In the case of a mainframe, it could be executing something called job control language. That job would go into the system, and then the sensory agents of the manager would then be listening out or monitoring for things happening in the system. And one of the things it can monitor is the fact that this program is finished. When that program is finished, it'll send a signal back to the manager, and the manager will update the status of its object representing that piece of work, and will then reevaluate the work in its work collection and determine what next can take off. And again, it'll send out its request to its agents to actually initiate the workload. So you can think of it as a brain. The manager is a brain which has a knowledge of the relationships of all the work. And it's sitting there as a background task. It's a server in that it can communicate with the user interface so that users can request the status of their workload. They can request the manager to initiate new workload or can manipulate the workload. But the manager is really controlling it. The user interface which also another program can utilize the same user interface. It's just a client server API can request the workload to be modified, and the manager doesn't actually do the work. The manager sends signals out to its agents, which actually do the work. So the agent could be sitting on a remote machine and executing a batch file. So it's not required that the manager be on the same machine as the machine where the actual work gets performed. They could be communicated. They could be linked through communication lines. And all it needs is that the manager has some kind of way of executing a remote call and also getting information from that remote machine. If you're familiar with OS2 or any multitasking operating system such as Unix, you'll know that you can have lots of background threads.
Mm-hmm.
If you have Windows, you're familiar with the fact that Windows gives you kind of limited multitasking and that you might have the print manager that's sitting there in the background. DOS itself is not a very good multitasking system, but they came about with TSR, Terminate and Stay Resident programs, which most people are familiar with. And they can basically sit there waiting on a particular keystroke. You can put a TSR in the background. That TSR can effectively become a server that you can communicate with it. You can send it requests just like the print manager. Or it could be sitting there waiting for a particular keystroke combination. So it filters on events in the system. And when certain events come along, it'll activate. Basically, a workload management system is not unlike a TSR. Only it's multitasking operating systems give you a more normalized way of sitting in the background. But basically, a workload management system would initiate its own filters so it can understand workload that's happening in the system. It can understand certain events that are occurring in the system. And basically, it has the knowledge to tie everything together and to act as a coordinator.
Does the software have a name?
ESP. Our software is called ESP.
ESP, okay. I keep saying software. Does ESP, is this a replacement for something else? That is there any way that comes with operating system, or is that some, I mean, if you don't have it, is it almost like the machine sits there and always waiting for somebody to tell it what to do?
Yes, most operating systems essentially come unbundled, so the base operating system wouldn't have too much in it to provide that kind of workload management. Usually vendors of operating systems would have maybe another unbundled piece of software which will do that function. But most systems have only something very rudimentary. For instance, you know, cron in Unix, or the mainframe systems, MVS, have automatic commands. But again, they're pretty crude because they're not supposed to be there as workload management systems. But
and was this developed by a big team of programmers that was sitting somewhere in?
No, it's actually very small. It doesn't. Software doesn't require teams of people. It's one of those things that is best done by a small group.
A group. I want everybody to know that Ray just turned red.
the original team was very, very small, but the team grew. If you use the appropriate development tool, you'll find that a small team of programmers can develop a system that is much more robust and unified. However, things are changing with object-oriented technology. It's possible for you to define you know modules, program modules, which basically object-oriented programming is a system whereby you define both data and programs or code that acts on the data, and you can create little black boxes with predefined interfaces. And the insides of the black boxes don't have to be known by the people who are utilizing the black boxes, but the black boxes can just kind of plug into each other. With that kind of system, whereby you're using these different objects with predefined interfaces, it's possible for large teams of programmers to develop applications much more rapidly and still have them very robust and reliable. And in fact, object-oriented programming is taking people to the point where you can reuse a lot more code. So you can, when you're building new applications, rather than writing it from scratch, you're just adding components to it and adding things in layers and taking advantage of code that's been pre-written. And it's very robust and a very good way of developing code. It'll be used a lot more in the future.
We'll be back to that. Do we have a caller on?
Yeah, Dave.
Dave? Good morning, Dave. You're on the air.
Thank you. I just have a simple question. I'll hang up and listen. I wondered if your guest could define in an understandable way client-server. I hear that term used over and over, and I don't think that I completely understand it. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Dave.
Bye-bye.
Ray?
Sure.
Wait a second. Let's do this. Let's break away for a commercial because we're right. I don't want to disrupt you in the middle. We'll be right back. Our number is 860-9549. Hang on. We'll be right back.
850 AM WYLT. 850 AM WYLT.
Welcome back to Computer Town USA. Our phone number again is 860-9549. I'm your host. My name is Amnon. With us in the studio today are Ray Nissan of Cybermation Inc. in Toronto, Canada, and David Nissan, and we're talking about workload automation in the mainframe and distributed client server. When we went away for a commercial, Dave called and asked if Ray would explain what is client server. Ray,
sure. Actually, client server is a fairly simple concept. Typically, when you're accessing a program, let's say you're looking at a spreadsheet or a word processor, you're talking to a program, you're interfacing with a program that's basically doing all its work itself. You type in something into a word processor and it'll format the information, it'll save it to disk. It's doing the work itself, although, in fact, it's asking the operating system to do some of the functions, such as the I/O, input-output. Client server is essentially a concept where you split the functioning that a program does into two components, one known as the client, and the other known as the server. Let's take, for instance, a database application. You're sitting there with a database on your machine, and you're filling in some numbers. You're filling in some numbers or requesting a report, and that program that's sitting there on your PC is doing all the work. It is doing the user interface portion. It's actually doing the portion which is actually updating the database or creating the report. With client server, you can basically make a separation between two programs, one which is essentially involved, the client side, is usually involved with the user interface, the part that talks to the user, and it might format the screen or it might print output on a printer. And the other component, known as the server, which might actually run the database. So you have a server in the background which is actually updating the database or doing the database searches. And so you're dividing, you're basically splitting up the work into two components. And the two components, the client and the server, communicate via something known as an API or application programming interface. There's a predefined set of API calls between the client and the server, which identifies a certain set of requests. Client-server, the reason you'd want client-server is manifold. If you're just sitting there on your PC, on your desktop, and it's a totally isolated machine, you have no requirement for client server. If, however, you're sitting there on a local area network and you're sharing information with a lot of different people, rather than having everybody have the same data on their own machine and work on it and then try to coordinate the data, you have a server which sits there and actually kind of owns the data, and whenever you need to make a request, like you need to pull out a report or do a database search, what you do is the user interface program that you're running on your PC might make a request to the server saying, please give me all records that fit this set of criteria, and the server will then first of all check that you really are authenticated client, that you're allowed to do this kind of work, and then we'll send you the information back so that your user interface or client side can actually display the information. So the server sits there in the background waiting for work requests from clients, and the clients will actually make requests of that. Now, it gets a bit more complicated than that because a client doesn't actually have to be a user. It could be another program. So you can have you talking to a through a client program to a server, and that server can in fact be a client of another more distributed server. But essentially, it's a situation where you're splitting tasks into two or more separate programs, and have those programs communicate. And those programs can communicate even if they're on the same PC, or they could be communicated across a local area network or a wide area network. It doesn't really matter where the server and client are, so long as there's an established means of communication between the two components.
Uh-huh. So in the simplest way that I can, I mean, now that I understand it, is it, and we'll take again PC, I use Microsoft Access, which is a database, and you use Microsoft Access, and we have a database that is shared on a server, and we don't have to have the database on my machine and on your machine and then combine it somehow and send it over there. We can manipulate the same database that is in the server, and all we have is sort of like a front end that shows us what's in there.
That's exactly it. That is exactly it.
And in fact, that's all there is to it?
It's amazing. I mean, client server, you know, that's all there is to client server, really. It's nothing magical. It's just a logical division of labor between two programs with an established interface between them. And that's essentially it. Your reason you'd use client server is manifold. There might be a situation where your PC is really great for displaying graphical information, but it might not be all that good for accessing very large amounts of data. It might not have the data bandwidth. It might not have the access to the amount of disk storage. So client server in dissimilar computing environments is useful where the program that actually sifts through the data and processes the data can be sitting on a machine that's very suited to what it needs to do, and your machine is very suited to displaying it graphically. A mainframe, for instance, is terrible at displaying information graphically. The interfaces to mainframes are really crude. But mainframes are very good at processing vast amount of data, and the bandwidth of a mainframe is much larger. I mean, you might talk about a 50 MIP mainframe and a 50 MIP PC. There's a vast difference between the two, primarily because the bandwidth that the mainframe is able to access through its multiple channels and disk drives is far greater than that of a PC. So the mainframe is very good at going through large amounts of data. What it's very bad at is trying to update graphical screens on somebody's terminal. So there you have a situation where the client is sitting there on a PC or a workstation, and it can give the user as much attention as the user requires, displaying everything nicely and graphically and intercepting individual keystrokes. Whereas the mainframe in the background is a very powerful data cruncher, and you make a request from your PC to the server sitting on the mainframe. The server doesn't have to be a mainframe. It could be another PC, or it could be a mid-range machine. But essentially, you're talking to a machine that has a greater capability for doing the kind of function you need to perform. It does the work and then sends you back the results. So it's really using the best ability of each machine.
Okay. Dave, I hope that answered your question. It sure enlightened me about the client server. I think we have time for another call. Our number is 860-9549. The line is open, so if anybody else wants to call in, this is your last chance for today to call in. David, is the new processor that's going to come up? No, I'm just kidding. David is sitting there so quietly and so nice. Do you play games on the computer? You do?
Mm.
What do you like to play?
Mm.
Tell us.
I like to play Scorched Earth, F-19.
Yeah. And are you good in it? F-19?
Yeah.
But don't you play Doom?
Do you play Doom?
Oh, yeah. My friend's computer has it. My friend has it.
You don't go to Dad's office and... And occupy...
He doesn't have many games.
Oh.
Not that I know.
Well, guess what? They play them even up there in the north. Same games we play down here.
And they they usually have a bus key, right? You flick this key, and whenever anybody comes along, it just switches to a spreadsheet.
Spreadsheet, yeah.
First, I want you to, for the benefit of those out there, I don't know how many are there, who could take advantage and learn more about what your company does, what's the phone number?
It's area code 905-479-4611, and our fax number is area code 905-479-4614.
Okay, we'll repeat that right as we're closing. We still have a few minutes, and we still have time for one more call if you want to call in. I'm still looking here at InfoWorld, and I see about software. It says Word Perfect 3.1 for Mac due this summer. I thought that they straightened out all those numbers between the PC and the Mac to be the same numbers, but I guess I was wrong. I mean, somebody would call and say, I'm using Word Perfect 3.1 and I'm having a problem with such and such. So I would probably say, you know what, you need to upgrade.
Great.
You need to come up to 608 or something like that. And here it is, 3.1 for the Mac. No, I better not say it. I was going to make a crack at the Mac, but I better not do it. Here's something interesting. Microsoft Corporation has announced a customer support line just for users who have switched from competitive products to Microsoft Office. The Office Switcher line puts users in touch with support engineers versed in Lotus Development Corporation 123, WordPerfect, Borland International Inc. Quattro, or Software Publishing Corporation's Harvard Graphics. The free support is available through a toll call to 206-635-7041. If you got the competitive upgrade, if you bought Microsoft Office using the competitive upgrade, you have a line here that you can talk to people who know the program that you upgraded from to Office, and it'll be a whole lot easier to talk to people like that. So the number again is 206-635-7041. Very interesting. It's about time somebody had a support for people that when they ask, but I used to do such and such, and then the support guy would say, well, hold on, let me find out exactly what that means in the other company's software. Now they can just right away tell you, okay, yeah, do this and do that. They know what you're talking about. They know what control J means. They don't have to go around looking for it. Ray, do you work any on the PCs, or you're all, I mean, your time is consumed by working on the... Do you have any PCs in the office?
We have a network, a local area network,
uh-huh.
And which is hooked up to our mainframe. And we're using Nobel 4, and we have about... all our PCs are hooked into it, and all our mainframe access is through the through PCs, through emulator programs.
So you're using the PCs only as sort of like dumb terminals to the mainframe, or you actually...
We actually use them. We have Lotus Notes. We have many applications on the local area network. So most of our work, our mainframe is really only used for development. Most of our production work is really done on our PCs in our local area network. We have email, we have notes, we have... also, we use it for accessing our mainframe, just because the PC emulation programs are much nicer than using terminals.
Dumb terminals, yeah.
Yes.
What do you use to hook, to talk? It's just like a...
We have a token ring connection to our mainframe,
so
and we
token
use...
Ring.
Yeah, and we use IBM's PC 3070 for Windows, which is a really good... package for accessing the mainframe, and gives you a lot of really nice features, like being able to program it and customize your keyboard, cut and paste, and basically gets over most of the problems that the 3070 terminals have.
Okay. Again, I want you to repeat the phone number.
The phone number is area code 905-479-4611, And our fax number is area code 905-479-4614.
And the name of the company is just
Cybermation, C-Y-B-E-R-Mation, M-A-T-I-O-N, Inc.
And that's in Toronto.
Right.
Well, it's time to start winding down. I was never involved with mainframes. I started with those little beady home computers, and came. I'm still going up. But I don't know. Maybe I should. I mean, here I am working with PCs, and if I had to go visit Ray, I would have to call American Airlines and get a ticket and go. Ray called yesterday morning. He said, "We're coming down. I just got a plane, so we're coming down." And here he is, just get in his plane, come down. I mean, this must be. Maybe I'll change and go to mainframe. Maybe I'm in the wrong business, huh?
No, everything's. It's all merging together. You'll find the distinction between the mainframe and the. In fact, you'll find your mainframe probably being used as a super server.
We are finding in our business that there's more and more that we have to hook the PCs to an AS400. A lot of people, I mean, we have a couple of them that goes to the AS400. And it's amazing how, I mean, I'm being exposed more and more to that part of...
It's amazing how connected...
It's unknown to me.
Actually, the AS400 is one of the most connectable machines out there. Oops.
Okay, I'm looking at the clock here right in front of me. Megan, it's just sticking in my face, and it's 11 o'clock. We'll be back with you next week at 10 o'clock. Till then, practice safe computing, back up your computers, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.